Sound check. Microphone 13. Sound check. Sound check. Microphone 12. Sound check. Microphone 11. Sound check. Microphone 10. Sound check. Microphone 9, sound check. And microphone 8. Microphone 7. Microphone 6. Microphone 5. Microphone 4. Microphone 3. Testifier 1, 2, and 3.
I will call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that the time is currently 1:34 p.m. on Thursday, February 28th, 2019. Present today, we have Representative Knopp, Representative LeBon, Representative Tilton, Representative Carpenter, Vice Chair Johnston, Co-Chair Wilson, Representative Ortiz, Representative Sullivan Leonard, Representative Josephson, and Representative Merrick, I believe, is on line. Representative Merrick, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. And feel free, as we have questions, just to jump right in and let me know if anything pops up there during the presentations. As we start, just a reminder, if folks could please mute their cell phones. Today's presentations will include budget overviews of the Department of Administration and Office of the Governor. House Finance will begin with the Department of Administration overview. Ms. Sanders and Ms. Lowenstein, if you could both please come to the table and introduce yourselves for the record, and go ahead and get started. And just to help with transcription, maybe prior to speaking, if you could just identify yourself, since we have two female voices, that would be surely appreciated. So with that, if you could put yourselves on the record.
For the record, good afternoon. My name is Lacey Sanders. I'm the Budget Director for the Office of Management and Budget. And with me, I have Sherry Lowenstein.
Good morning. I'm Sherry Lowenstein, the Administrative Services Director serving the Department of Administration.
Thank you very much, and please proceed.
And I'll start. Again, this is Sherry. I'm here today. First, thank you for having us. I'm here today to present a fairly high-level overview of Department of Administration budget changes. We'll begin on slide 3. In fiscal year 2019, our total budget was $343,978.5 million. In FY20 governor amended, that amount is $374,977.2 million. That's an overall change increase of just under $31 million, $30,998.7 million to be exact. I'm starting on the chart on the left. I'll describe the funding source changes, and I'll begin at the top with federal. We don't have much federal in the Department of Administration. In fiscal year 19, we had just over $3.9 million. We had an increase of about $200,000 in federal, or a 5% change to 4.1. That's for a six-year grant for the Office of Public Advocacy to address the opioid crisis. In the green bar, that's other funds. For the Department of Administration, we have some big buckets of funds there that this is comprised of. I'll start with just what those are and a little bit of explanation of what they do. The first one is interagency receipts. We're a chargeback agency. We use interagency receipt authorization to charge other agencies for our service. In the difference between 19 and 20 is pretty insignificant. It's a $140,000 reduction. The next item we have in that green bar is internal services fund. That's used exclusively by the Office of Information Technology. In 19, that amount was $47,491,000. In 20, that's increased to $74,169,000. This is just under a $27 million increase that's due exclusively to the integration of IT services. That's people. We've consolidated some contracts in the Office of Information Technology, so they're now paid there, and the services provided to agencies rather than them paying those costs directly. We, in turn, charge that cost back to them. In something to bring to your attention is we do have a $15 million supplemental in 2019 as well for the same reason. In 20, we do anticipate up to 86 more staff traveling or transferring into the organization as part of that consolidation. Another big consumer of other funds is the public building fund. There is really no change there. It's about $500. And that fund, those are the funds that we use for to charge agencies for space in our state-owned, DOA state-owned buildings.
The Representative Ortiz.
Mr. Chairman. So, Ms. Lowenstein, are you right now describing the difference in the FY19 management plan of 534,578 million to 269,571.9 million? Is that what you're explaining in terms of where those changes took place?
Mm-hmm. Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, that's correct.
And is it, Mr. Chairman?
Hello?
Is it in the realm of possibility that we could actually see these specific line item changes rather than just kind of summarizing them orally? Is that possible?
Through the chair, yes, that is.
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, the changes that Ms. Lowenstein is referring to are a part of the detail that's provided in the black binders and the subcommittee books that the Legislative Finance Division provides. She's just giving a high-level overview of the changes. Those details are outlined in those books.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So on the shared services, and we heard there was going to be a lot of savings on that, but there's a lot of money moving, you know, back and forth, some through interagency receipts, some obviously in internal services. How can we, and I've tried to get this information, how do we as legislators really find out how much money we were spending in that area when it was in all the different agencies compared to what it is right now? Are you close to being done with it? And then do you have some type of documentation that shows this is what it cost us then, and then this is what's going to cost us now that we have everybody in one place?
Through the chair, Chair Wilson, we did do some baselining for Office of Information Technology and for shared services as well. We did do some baselining of costs. We have costs in personal services. We have in contractual, travel, and all other lines. Right now, we're still in the process of bringing staff in, looking at all the purchases that are done across agencies independently. There's an IRB board is what they call it, Investment Review Board, where every purchase of contract or software needs to run through this board so we can, number one, see what people are using. We'll know if there's several departments or just one department using that. So areas that we can look at to consolidate prices or services and bring it out at a cheaper price. So all of that's going on right now as we transfer staff in to provide those same services that they have received, so desktop. We have seen some savings to date, but at the same time, we need to reinvest to some of those savings we'll need to reinvest in order to, like security is a good place to, our security hasn't been that great. So we'll reinvest to make our IT better and service our agency better. In the future, I expect to see those kind of savings come to us.
Follow up.
So I guess I'm getting a little confused because I know besides shared services, I know the administration's doing some other cost-effective measures as well. Is there, like you just talked about, buying products, but I think that sits outside of what we thought shared services was going to be, because at the time, a few years ago, I think it had to do with only IT. And now I think there's some other projects you're doing. Is there any way that, you know, you could break it down for us just so that we know the new, even though none of them are probably totally complete, I just want to make sure, I've heard a lot of things about shared services that we didn't get the bang for a buck that we thought we were going to get. And in fact, it might have made some of our agencies less efficient. But I think that sits separate to some of these other ones of, as far as, you know, buying all of our stuff at the same place, you know, in volume, we can have savings. But I think that sits outside of the shared services. And maybe it's all kind of been bundled now. I'm just not sure.
Through the chair. For shared services, that would be the Travel and Payables Initiative. The procurement will fold into that. Office of Information Technology is the IT consolidation. We're not referring to that as a shared, it is a shared services, but we're, it's really the IT consolidation. So when we talk about shared services, it's the Travel and Payables Initiative. In that case, we are still waiving people in. We've brought in most of the travel. We've left some out. Confidential travel, for instance, we've not brought in yet. And once we have a confidential unit, we can look at doing that, but our priority was bringing regular travel in. We were given, staff, so we transfer the staff over, we pay them now, we do a chargeback. We weren't given overhead, so the things that we're looking at is finding receipts, and we're doing that, finding some vendor fees that we're using to offset the costs for that initiative. So we're still, we've actually just made one investment in some software that has allowed us to track what we're receiving better. We were using email before. We also are starting a new process that will be within the accounting system that'll reduce the time to process the travel by about 40%. So we are starting to be able to gain and find some efficiencies to reduce our staff time, which in the end, hopefully, shall reduce the staff that we need. We're also starting to bring the payables initiative in. So we're still doing a lot of work to consolidate those pieces of that work.
That's great. It sounds like it's growing and you're finding more efficient. So it's probably not as simple as the initial project that I'm remembering that admin came in here. But one last question. It's so hard to you know, follow IA receipts, internal receipts. Do you ever see that there's going to be a point once you get this all done that literally these employees will become actually employees of the administration and we won't be doing the chargebacks the same way because that would kind of like take out the duplicating process right now, which I learned this morning and understand a little bit better than I did, but it's still a duplication of funds, and the only way to stop that is if, like something like this, admin would decide that these employees would just actually belong to administration utilizing these kinds of services.
Through the chair, if we are 100% successful and we're able to find enough receipts so that we do not need to charge an agency back for the service provided, that will be the only way we can abolish the interagency receipts.
Just trying. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Please continue.
The second to the last big item that is included in the other fund sources are our retirement and benefit funds. We have a number of changes here. This is a total of about 7.6% or million increase. Excuse me. Of that, we have 3.7 million which is the second half of the employer group waiver program that's adding Medicare Part D. We had pharmaceutical rebates in the past. By adding this Medicare Part D, we're going to increase our rebates by 16 million to 23 million. In addition, adding this will reduce our state assistance by 40 to 52 million. We've also put in place a number of contracts where we will be able to see some savings of as much as $4 million on the active side. Once we get further into those contracts, we can look at adding retirees, which will bring us even more savings. These savings will go to the health trust, the Alaska Care Health Trust. And the last item that represents, the last big item that represents the change in this chart is we've increased Violent Crimes Compensation Board funding. That's the crime victim funds, which are PFDs that are garnished from felons, by $851,000. There was a bill, HB 286, that passed last year that increased their ability to receive and spend receipts of $180,000. And the other thing that happened was PFDs, the higher amount of the increase, the more money there is to distribute across the agencies that receive this funding. So in short, in the other category, we have an increase.
Sorry, we've got a question from Representative Johnston.
Thank you, through the chair. And I realize we'll be covering this somewhat in subcommittee, but I was curious as far as your Medicare Plan D, as far as drugs, is the savings from actually a decrease in costs of the drugs, or is it just being able to get cash up front so the cash flow is where you're getting your savings?
Through the chair, as I understand it, we are receiving more revenues off of the drugs that are being consumed by the people in the health trust. So instead of receiving a dime, we're receiving 30 cents, something along that line.
Okay. And my understanding is it's an immediate, it's not a 120-day, but as it happens in present time, is that correct, the cash back?
Through the chair, that's accurate. We're actually, our projections are low compared to what we're anticipating we actually will collect. So we expect it to be a little higher than what I just quoted.
Thank you.
Representative Sylvan Leonard.
Thank you, through the chair. Just to kind of carry over from Representative Johnston, is that cost saving then coming from the new contract then with the pharmacy benefit managers? Or the new PBM plan, by chance?
Through the chair, it's by adding the Medicare Part D process, so it's a federal reimbursement.
Okay, right. And that's not part of it then?
Through the chair, I believe that's correct. So in short, I'll just do a little recap of the the green bar. The increase there is represented almost entirely by the Internal Services Fund for OIT. That's 26.7 million. Retirement benefits, 7.6, and the violent crimes compensation of 800,000. The last item we have is the blue bar, and that represents our undesignated general funds and our designated general funds. In FY19, the $105,495 is represented by $72,517 of undesignated general funds and $32,977.8 of designated general funds. In 20, the $101,300,000, that's representative of $68,307.1 undesignated general funds and $32,992.9 of designated general funds. That's a reduction of approximately $4.2 million. Our largest consumers of our undesignated general funds is the Office of Public Advocacy and the Public Defender. In 20, that represents about 73% of those funds. Our largest consumer of the designated general funds is the Division of Motor Vehicles. That's $16.7 million, and they also, in turn, give us back $30 to $40 million annually to the general fund. The chart on the right shows our budgeted position change. You can see that we have a total in 19 of 1,245 positions, and in 20 it's 1,263. That's an increase of 18 overall. Most of those are in the full-time, the blue bar. There's a total of 19 increase there. 15 of those are due to staff waiving in from or transferring in from the Department of Transportation to the Office of Information Technology. We also have 6 staff that we're looking for in retirement benefits. We have an offset of 3 non-perms for them. And then my position and 1 other in shared services are being deleted or moved or deleted.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you. And you said that the DMV still brought in the most revenue. Mm-hmm. With us starting the Real ID Act, do we have any idea whether or not we hit the mark as far as the charge for the Real ID versus having a regular driver's license?
I do not know that at this time, but I can get back to you with that. I've asked some questions, but not that one.
Follow up?
This might be for the subcommittee. I'm also concerned that when someone doesn't get their driver's license and you call the DMV and they don't know where it went either because there's no tracking on those, there's no provision at this point, whoever has the Department of Administration, and I'll just give you a great example. So my driver's license didn't come to me. I call a couple months later, they don't know where it went. The FBI found it on somebody who had not just taken my license but many others. And the only offer I got was to get my same driver's license back with the same number on it. Which is I currently carry, but I would wish there would be a process to when somebody else gets your driver's license, or maybe now with the Real ID having even more information than what original driver's license had, maybe it's time for the DMV to start looking at actually tracking it or having us pick it up at the DMV, but I don't think the regular mail keeps her license very secure, and it didn't make me feel very good when the thief actually was carrying it in his pocket. And I just got a call not too long ago, somebody else didn't get their driver's license, and we don't even know where it's at. At least mine was returned. Thank you.
And through the chair, thank you for that comment.
We've got a question from Representative Josephson.
Thank you. Through the chair, for Ms. Lowenstein. The OPA and PD budgets, my understanding is, and I don't know if it's causative or if there's a correlation or not, but I think the public defenders were seeking 20 more public defenders, which is a lot, obviously. And I don't know if that correlated with anticipated passage of the governor's crime bill package. Instead, what they've received is money for sort of half a position or one position. Do you know what the impact of passing the crime package would be on the public defender's budget, and has that come up in conversation?
Through the chair, no, I do not know what the impact would be. I'm not sure that they could articulate that either. The Public Defender Agency right now believes that they, in the current year, that they should be able to provide the services necessary. The appeals backlog will increase some. Our commissioner is committed to looking at how they do their work. Is it being done most efficiently? And with that information, taking action.
Okay, thank you.
Please continue.
The next page four. Oops. There's two bullets here that represents the general fund changes. The first is the withdrawal of the state grants for the Alaska Public Broadcasting TV and radio and satellite services. That's $3,496,100 in general funds, and there's also $100,000 in interagency receipts.
A question from Representative Ortiz and then Sullivan Leonard. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Lowenstein, on the $3.5 million reduction for Alaska Public Broadcasting, what kind of analysis was done in the decision to make that deduction? In other words, was there any kind of analysis as to the impact of that reduction?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, when we were reviewing each of the department's budgets, we were prioritizing the department's core services, and this one was not a core service of the department. It is a grant that is outside, not statutorily required, and therefore was proposed for reduction.
Follow up.
So are you aware personally of the role that public broadcasting plays in many of the rural communities in terms of emergency information broadcasting, things like that? Are you aware of that?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, yes, I am.
And so in the decision to make the reduction, you felt that those emergency contact provider services that they provide were not essential?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, I would like to clarify that this wasn't a decision that Ms. Lowenstein made. This was a decision of the governor.
Representative Sullivan Leonard? Representative Ortiz?
I understand that, okay. But in all due respect, the governor's not here. Ms. Lowenstein is the representative of the governor. So my question, I guess, is, was it deemed that those emergency services that public radio provides, particularly in rural Alaska, broadcasting services, aren't essential?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, those services may be essential to communities. If the entities that are receiving the grant funding would like to look elsewhere for other funding that can support those and continue in them, that is their prerogative. This funding was identified as non-essential for the core functions that the Department of Administration provides.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Sullivan Leonard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kind of on that same vein, this particular line item is something that people have looked at over the years for particular reductions. And so with that, there's been a long time discussion on maybe other avenues where support could continue for this, maybe at the local level, tribal level, or other support venues. Has that been discussed, or you know, are they bringing any of the local entities in to say, can you help support this if it's important for your community, much like what Ms. Sanders had just said?
Through the chair, Representative Sullivan Leonard, the public broadcasting, the Department of Administration only gives the grants out. Public broadcasting is responsible to give us a list of who receives what amount. I know that if that Department of Administration would be glad to help them in any way that we can to help transition them, whether it's help prioritize. But that is the thought, like you're thinking, is potentially from other sources.
And I appreciate hearing that. I'm just hearing more and more the impacts at the local level, and so mm-hmm. if discussions can continue to assist those on the receiving end to find other venues for support, especially for something like this, I hope that that's happening or will happen. Thank you.
For the chair, thank you.
I wonder if it's possible, do you have a list of all the grantees from last year that can be provided? Thank you.
The chair, yes, we can provide that.
Representative Ortiz?
And totally, this is just a question from my own information. Is this funding, does it in any way represent match funding for federal funding that might come out of National Public Radio or anything like that? I don't know. That's the question.
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, I'm not certain. We can check on that and get back to you.
Through the chair, I believe that there is some match funding. I did. I do understand for public radio in particular, that's the only grant area that I understand this funding represents 12% of their overall funding. For I don't know about the other areas, though.
So just for clarification.
Representative Ortiz.
Just for clarification, then, are you saying that it's your understanding that this money represents some match potential for these different radio stations to receive further? So I guess I'm saying the opportunity cost is greater than just the 3.4 or $3.5 million. The opportunity cost is greater because that would then mean the federal funding wouldn't come in. Is that correct?
Through the chair, I believe that's accurate.
Thank you.
And that was Ms. Lowenstein just helping with the transcription here. We've got Representative Wilson.
Mr. Chairman, so when you give these grants out, is any paperwork filled out, what other funds that they have coming? Because I think that's, I don't think it's necessarily federal funding that has to have match. It may or may not, but I mean, it would help us if we had not just what went out statewide, but overall picture, because I do think you're correct that some, it's a very low percentage, but I think also for some of the more rural areas, it represents a much higher percentage. But the only way we're really gonna be able to understand if we know what the other funding is that they receive, and then we would be able to find out, because not all federal funding is matched. Sometimes you get the federal funding because of what you're doing, but also some of the funding could be actually be coming from the communities, maybe native corporations. But it's gonna be really hard for us to understand if you just give us how much we're giving them without understanding the impact it may or may not have on their other funding abilities.
Through the chair, that is accurate. And if they were using this for match, it could be that they use some donations for match instead. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to look at this.
That was Ms. Lowenstein. Any further questions? Seeing none, if you could continue with your presentation.
And the last bullet that I have here is the statewide executive branch 50% travel reduction. On this sheet, it shows 459.1 general funds. Of that, 289.2 is undesignated general funds, and 169.9 is designated general funds. The total reduction to the department is 592.7.
Representative Ortiz.
So can you explain a little bit in terms of how that impacts admin services or the Department of Administration in their ability to carry out their duties, their obligations? On the face of it, sure, it seems like if we can reduce travel, that's probably a good thing. But will it have a specific impact on the ability for the administration to do their duties with a 50% travel reduction?
Through the chair, when the Office of Public Advocacy and the Public Defender did not receive a 50% cut, and that's because of the work that they do. There was a calculation that I cannot speak to. I think Ms. Sanders might be able to, that states what that difference was, but it's the same as what law and public safety received. What we will do, though, and are doing, is looking at every single travel our commissioner is, and if it is not mission critical, it is not being approved. We're looking at more video conferencing. I'm sure you've heard that in the past, but our commissioner is very much committed to things like video conferencing, and not only, you know, like I'm going to use the word Skype. Skype might not be the one, but and it may be in a conference room. So all those things which Department of Administration does hold and can push out to more agencies can be done to help every state agency reduce their travel.
Seeing no further questions, please continue.
And that is it for my presentation.
Last one. We've got a question from Representative Johnston.
Yes, thank you, through the chair. When you said public defenders, did you also say AOGs, Alaska Oil and Gas Commission? Was that the other ones you mentioned?
Through the chair, Alaska Oil and Gas did receive 50% reduction as well.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions on the DOA overview? Seeing none, thank you very much, Ms. Lowenstein. And Ms. Sanders, if you want to go ahead and stay at the table, Ms. Sanders, we'll go ahead and bring up, let's see here. Next, we have Ms. Henderson. If you could also, Mr. Henderson, we've got a Ms. in here. We'll change that. And if you could put yourself on the record and proceed with the office of the governor overview.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, Co-Chair Representative Wilson, and members of the House Finance Committee. I'm Sean Henderson, the Administrative Services Director for the Office of the Governor. I'd like to thank you for allowing me to present today. And before we go to the slides, I'd like to give you a brief summary or a little information about the responsibilities of our agency. The Office of the Governor exercises executive power of the state of Alaska as set out in the Alaska Constitution and in statute. The Governor's office includes the Office of the Lieutenant Governor and the Division of Elections, where the division oversees statewide elections. The office also includes the Alaska Human Rights Commission, who is tasked with enforcing Alaska human rights laws. And the governor's office also includes the Office of Management and Budget that oversees the preparation and presentation of the governor's budget. With that being said, I'd like to go to the slide, the first slide, which is the funding and budgeted position comparison. Looking on the left side of the slide, you'll see the total budget for the Office of the Governor is slightly increasing from $28,850,000 to $28,961,000. In that numbers, there are unrestricted general fund, which is the blue section. The general funds are being reduced from $27,781,000 to $24,747,000. The other funds are increased from $838,000 to $3,984,000. Details on that increase will be shown on the second slide. Federal funds are reduced by $1,000. If you look at the right side of the slide, it shows the budgeted position comparison. There's no change in the non-perm positions. They remain at 23. However, the full-time positions are increasing from 136 to 154. As indicated earlier, if we go to the second slide, you'll see the detail in the changes. Looking at the first bullet, you'll see the governor's office is proposing to reduce its contingency fund by $300,000. That fund originally was $550,000. It will leave a remaining balance of $250,000 after taking the $300,000 reduction. This was an item that was discussed last year. I think this reduction represents a move in the right direction. Going to the second bullet shows the consolidation of the administrative services director positions that are moving from the departments to the Office of Management Budget. The cost of that is $2,706,000, and it's funded by interagency receipts. And then the final bullet, again, reflects the travel reduction, the 50% across the board for all departments statewide, showing a reduction of $618,000 general fund.
We got a question from Representative Johnston.
Yes, thank you through the chair. Your second item as far as interagency, when you lay out what the Office of Governor is, you've got 5 different sections. How did you come up to 13 positions?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, the 13 positions represents the admin services directors that were previously located within each of their agencies. So Department of Transportation has an admin service director, Department of Administration, and we are transferring those 13 positions into the Office of Management Budget.
Thank you. I'm sorry. I was flipping it. So I was thinking this was all coming from the governor's office, so I was confused. Thank you.
Got a question from Representative Wilson and then Knopp.
Mr. Chairman, so the other 5 PCNs, what are those and where are they coming from? Because we have 18 on the previous page, and this counts for 13 of them.
Through the chair to Representative Wilson, that is correct, Representative. There are 18 positions that are transferring. 13 of those positions are admin services directors. 3 positions are from the Economic Development Council, 2 positions from Fish and Game that have all moved to the governor's office.
Follow up?
Can you tell me why? Not just on the 3 economic development positions, but why you're moving vehicle rental tax to pay for those versus putting those in a different area, whether just being UGF. And the 2 positions from Fish and Game, what exactly are those positions and why are they being moved?
Ms. Sanders?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, the governor's budget includes a transfer of economic development functions from the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. It's transferring 3 positions and the funding associated with the programs into the governor's office. There are other functions that were also included in the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development's Economic Development Division, and those functions are being transferred to Community and Regional Affairs. So essentially eliminating the Division of Economic Development as it's being transferred elsewhere, the functions are. The 2 positions that were associated with Department of Fish and Game were 2 division director positions that were vacant and no longer being utilized in the department. They are proposed to be transferred to the governor's office. The services and the work that is still being done by the Habitat Division and the Subsistence Division will be continued. It was just identified that those 2 director positions were no longer necessary.
Follow up?
So I guess my concern is, and I'm fine if you're able to take care of Fish and Game in that fashion, but why would you not have just deleted those 2 positions if they're not necessary and added 2 new positions if that's what the governor's office did with, so we had a better understanding of exactly what those positions, you know, I mean, is the governor going to be doing something different than he hadn't been doing before, or why couldn't a vacancy be utilized?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, Representative Wilson, I apologize. There are multiple ways to do budget transactions. An increment and decrement could have been utilized. There were two available division director positions and funding associated with them. Those duties were no longer needed in the Department of Fish and Game. There was a need in the Office of the Governor, so it was proposed as a transfer.
Representative Wilson?
So that makes sense, but I'm still trying to figure out what the two new positions are necessary that he doesn't have currently. And then I also still want to find out why we're taking $108,000 for vehicle real tax. Even if, you know, they did that somewhere else, it doesn't necessarily make it the right place to take money.
Ms. Sanders?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, to address the first question, which was on the division director's positions. So the two new positions, if I recall correctly, is the budget director position and a deputy director position within the Office of Management and Budget. So those are two new duties those are two new positions with duties that are in the Office of Management and Budget as we work through OMB is, as you can see, consolidating the admin services directors and creating basically a new way of how Office of Management and Budget is functioning, and that required two new positions. Those two positions were identified as available and were transferred. Regarding the vehicle rental taxes, those funds were appropriated to economic development to work on tourism-related functions within the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. With those functions no longer occurring in the Department of Commerce and the functions now being done within the Office of the Governor, those monies were transferred with the positions that they're supporting. So the work that it was being done in the Department of Commerce is now being done under the Office of the Governor, and the funding was supporting the positions that are being transferred.
And finally, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wilson.
I believe you have the governor's budget, but if I remember correctly, that $108,000, I think came around when they actually were doing ATIA and quite a bit of the functions. I'm not sure if all those functions are still being currently done, or whether or not the tourism industry has taken that back, so that $108,000 may or may not be doing the same kind of function. But lastly, I'm glad you put the administrative service directors together. I think it stops doing that silo that we thought. But if you could just give us a little bit more information on why that was done and what maybe you've already seen as the positives by putting admin service directors together, and the benefit there might be with talking to each other about functions versus just within their own silos.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, you have spoken to exactly what we are trying to do with the admin services directors being under the Office of Management and Budget. Prior, the admin services directors worked within their own agencies and were very focused on what their agencies were doing and how they operated. The goal with moving those positions under Office of Management and Budget is to bring the knowledge together and to be able to have the conversations about how we can do business better as a state. There are agencies that are utilizing systems that can benefit other agencies. And prior to having them all at the Office of Management and Budget, those discussions weren't necessarily happening. And through some of the proposals that we have, for example, on the human resources and procurement consolidations, we have the ability to have the admin services directors pool their knowledge and what works and what doesn't work as we transfer. You know, we have the prior consolidations of Office of Information Technology and Shared Services that are taking a lot of time. We're learning as we go through those, and with those experiences, we should be able to transfer the human resources and procurement consolidations a lot quicker and hopefully have more success.
Thank you.
We've got Representative Knopp, Josephson, Ortiz, and Johnston. Representative Knopp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rep. Wilson pretty much covered all of my questions. kind of stole my thunder there. She had exact same questions I had for the most part. But I am concerned about the consolidation of administrative services directors, and I appreciate what you're trying to do and find them efficiencies. Usually when you consolidate, you're trying to have a reduction in personnel or efficiencies in services, one of the two. So I see the goal towards efficiency in services. I guess my question probably is now, are we at some time going to need that many administrative services directors, or is there a plan to find the efficiencies and reduce personnel? Do you have a feel for them discussions? What's the intent?
Ms. Sanders?
Through the chair, Representative Knopp, I think it's a little too soon to say whether or not we're going to be reducing positions. The budget right now does include the 13 positions that were in the agencies. We are working with the admin services directors to identify what duties and functions that they will continue. We think that it is important that the admin services directors continue to keep the relationships that they have with their departments, and part of that involves being participating in the conversations that are being had in the departments, so with the commissioners, with the deputy commissioners, with the program directors. So does that answer your question?
Representative Knopp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So with that, you know, when admin service directors were inside their departments, obviously they had support staff with them. So did all that support staff stay intact, still inside the departments, or what's happened there?
Through the chair, yes. Those positions, the support staff, the budget analysts, the procurement staff, all of those stayed within the departments. This was just moving the admin services directors.
Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to flesh this issue out just a little bit more. Ms. Sanders, just so I understand what's going on in my mind's eye, these 13 positions are now physically embedded in an arm of the Office of the Governor and not in their home departments. Do I have that right?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson. These positions are actually splitting their time. If you're talking physically, they have offices in the departments that they work in, and we are working on establishing space in the Office of Management and Budget for them to have a desk as well. So they will split their time between the agencies.
Follow up?
I'm just trying to figure out if they're spending part of their time, for example, in the state office building, how that's any different than it was. To me, it's sort of a cultural thing. I mean, I'm aware, obviously, that every department is run by the executive branch, and that commissioners are there at the pleasure of the governor. But I'm just wondering, for example, it's occurred to me that someone, ASDs are called directors, the director of directors is a title I've heard referred to. If they're embedded outside their own departments, they must be receiving information, I guess, in the typical way over the phone or by email. I'm just trying to get a sense of what cultural change this represents, particularly if they have two offices.
Ms. Sanders?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, the admin services directors are going to play a role, or I think it's the intent that they're going to play a role being that conduit between the agencies. So they will be determining where their time is necessary to be at. If it's necessary for them to be at the department for the afternoon or for the day because they have meetings going on that are specific to something that's happening in the department, then that's where their time will be focused. If we are working on specifically on a project at the Office of Management and Budget, and their time will be utilized in the building, the span can, then that's where they will be. And it will be a balance, but they will be that link between the agencies and OMB as we work through larger projects or consolidations or the budget process. And they will be determining to some extent where they need to be at what time.
Representative Josephson?
I guess, and I don't mean this in a negative way. I'm just trying to get a sense of where the governor's going. For example, in each departmental budget, there is sort of a preface that says the legislature authorizes movement of funds between appropriations. In combination with this and some other things, does this signal a desire of the administration to consolidate power as best it can, and maybe for some beneficial purpose, but is this an effort in that regard?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, no. The language that you're referring to that was within each agency was a proposal to allow the departments working with Office of Management and Budget and those ASD positions to be able to have the flexibility to move the money between appropriations as we're making large reductions in the department, throughout departments. It wasn't intended to be a power shift in any way. It was the language was prior, has been used in prior years, specifically in the Department of Health and Social Services, when there were large reductions made in that department. And it was just a proposal to be able to have that flexibility as we're making large reductions throughout the state.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you. Representative Ortiz, then Johnston and Carpenter. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Going along the same lines of questioning from Representative Josephson and others, can you speak a little bit about how the bringing in the admin services director into the governor's office, how has that impacted the role of the different commissioners of the different agencies? Can you tell me how what kind of impact that's had on their particular role?
Ms. Sanders?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, I don't believe that it has changed the role of the commissioners or the ASDs, the admin services directors. The commissioners, the deputy commissioners, the program directors, as well as the admin services directors are all participating in the conversations with regards to the budget and the operations of their department. Nothing has changed.
So then in the case of, let's just say, the Department of Education, the economic decisions that are the proposal on the budget for what is intended to happen to education funding, you're saying that that decision was a result of the commissioner being on board with that decision. Is that what you're saying?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, the commissioner was a part of the conversations in those decisions.
Follow up?
So then we can deduct from that the impact of those kinds of decisions are certainly have impact on policy and, in the case of education, a direct impact on the goal, what I would think would be of every commissioner, would be to improve education. So I can assume then that the decision to reduce funding for the BSA, for this particular example, I mean, we can talk about some other things, but for this particular example, was a decision to improve education. Is that what you're saying? The decision to reduce funding for education in the BSA formula was a decision to improve education, which is ultimately what the job of the commissioner is, correct?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, I don't know how to answer your question because I feel like it might be putting words that out there that are not appropriate for me to speak to. The Department of Education's commissioner's job is to support education and find the best outcomes for his department. This was a budget decision to reduce the amount of funding that goes out through K-12 education, and the commissioner was part of that conversation in that decision.
Thank you.
Representative Johnston.
Yes, thank you through the chair. One of the things that I have been looking forward to from the office has been program budgeting. Is this going to give us the avenue so we can start seeing budgeting through programs?
Through the chair, Representative Johnston, we have produced priority program matrices for each of the department, and we will make sure that they are available to all of you so that you can see that information. When the budget was developed, we did utilize those priority programs and core services, and that information is available.
Follow up? Actually, what I'm looking for is a budget that's based on programs. For example, you have programs that are for 0 to 5 year olds that are in multiple different departments. Have you started that approach?
Through the chair, Representative Johnston, I see what you're asking now, and no. The budget that we built was based on individual departments' core services. We are looking at how programs are impacted across agencies. So specifically, if I can give an example, when we're talking about looking at information technology projects that are put forward as requests, we're making sure that those capital projects, if they impact multiple agencies in any way, that they're a coordinated effort moving forward so that the software or the system can be utilized across agencies.
Okay, thank you. Could I ask one?
And Representative Johnston?
You might have already answered this, and I might have missed it. The two positions, the fish and game positions, are they funded through receipts or designated funds?
Through the chair, Representative Johnston, those are funded with unrestricted general funds, not with receipts.
Thank you.
Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question was asked and answered.
Do we have any further questions? Seeing none, did you have anything further, Mr. Henderson?
No, I don't, sir.
Okay. Anything else, Ms. Sanders? Nothing. Ms. Representative Knopp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Sanders, I just a simple question. I think it's simple. I hope it's simple. In the OMB budget, I see a substantial increase in services. Can you tell me what services consist in OMB, please?
Through the chair, Representative Knopp, I believe, if I'm going off my memory here, so I can follow up and make sure that I'm speaking accurately. But when we transferred the 13 positions, the 13 admin services positions from their agencies, we also added in our agency receipt authority to address their services costs related to computers, IT,
travel,
and I think those were the main costs.
Okay, yeah, travel is a separate line item.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Other Representative Wilson?
And this is just for the conversation that we went today. It would be really nice if the commissioners could be online. It'd be nice if you probably should stay on topic. It's kind of hard when you talk off something. This was two different departments, but all the policy people, we do appreciate what you do, but when it gets to that point for us to better understand the numbers, then we really need to hear from those who will now then have to take those numbers and make them reality. And I know that some of them don't live here or other places, and I don't know about you, Mr. Chairman, but I'm fine if they're online, but I think it will just help the conversation. I know you don't mind getting back to us, but then the public doesn't get to hear those answers because we get an email and they sit out there wondering, you know, what the answer was. So if that would be possible in the next ones that we have, I think that would be very helpful for us to understand, you know, what these decreases may or may not do, and then the thinking of those who are going to take the policy out.
And obviously the preference would be for folks to be here in person, but if they can't be, I'm certainly open to folks being online. We've got a question from Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just share the co-chair's request. My understanding is the other body has made the same request, and I think the House should do as well. Thank you.
Representative Knopp.
Mr. Chairman, I do not have a question, but I have a comment, if I could. For those of us who fairly knew it, diving into the weeds on the budget and the component details, when you're just looking for the quick summary on the far right side, that comparison is in fact a comparison between the budget that was laid out in December 15th versus the governor's amended on February 13th. So if you go back to the actuals in 18, since we don't have the actuals in 19, the numbers are a little skewed if you really want to compare what was actuals a year ago to what they are today. So I just mentioned that. So you kind of need to read to the far left or the far right to get your true percentage of increase or decrease if you're looking at what it was, not what was proposed. So it's substantially different in some cases. So thank you.
Representative Wilson?
I'm just trying to understand. So are you saying these charts are based on the governor's December 15th one, because they are actually to the FY19 management plan? I just want to make sure as we start putting all these things out that everybody understands what we're trying, because I'm not sure what you're saying. So could you repeat it?
Mr. Chairman, if you look at the component detail, and in this case I have the OMBs, and if you look at the far right, the differences are compared, the percentages are from what was proposed, the governor's proposed, and then the governor's amended. That's where your differences are. So if you go to the far left and take the actuals, then you look at the governor's amended. For me, I'd like to see what was actual a year ago compared to what we're doing this year, not what was laid out in December. That was just a proposal. So
I believe what you're looking at, because we're looking at our sheets trying to find it, I'm on the website for the Office of Management.
I am on OMB, yes. Look at the component details, yes. And that's where I find more facts. I'm sorry, it's not on our sheet. No, and I'm asked the question, Mr. Chairman, while Lacey is here. So if I get it wrong, she can correct me. But
and through the chair, Representative Knopp, Office of Management and Budget, as well as the Legislative Finance Division, can run you specific reports with comparisons, so that you're not having to cross multiple columns in the detail.
Thank you.
Yeah. Anything further from the committee? Seeing none, thank you very much for coming before the Finance Committee today. Our next meeting is scheduled for Friday, February 29th at 1:30 p.m. And at that meeting, we will continue our FY20 department budget overviews with the Department of Revenue and the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. And then we will have an update on investment funds and cash flow deficiency. So if there's nothing further to come before Representative LeBron.
What was the date of our next meeting?
That's a very good point.
Just wanted to confirm we don't have leap year this year.
I think the leap year is not until 2020, so that means that you are correct, and thank you very much. March 1st, Friday, March 1st at 1:30 p.m. And so we just time jumped about a year or so. So with that, we will be adjourned at 2:38 p.m. Thank you.